Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We have a weekend where the Orioles will not drag you down to the ballpark, but they will drag you to your televisions, to your Apples, to your iPhones, to my wife's iPad that she's streaming digitally from the other room. Orioles go on the road and playing a torrid brand of baseball. Luke Jones and I will be together next Friday at Fadley's Seafood in Lexington Market. I will have these Pac-Man scratch-offs, courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery, in conjunction with our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, where we have clean water. And I'm drinking out of the orange-colored glass, just so everybody knows. Officially, it's not orange Kool-Aid. It's like the real thing. And Liberty Pure Solutions gives me the water for that, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. On Wednesday, I will be at Green Mountain Bowl, next to Green Mountain Station, eating the Green Mountain Station crab cake. But we're going to be in the bowling alley, and it's going to be a about the racing commission and about what's going on with Maryland Racing and Magma. And we also have the Preakness 1 month out now. You would not know that. We have the Kentucky Derby in 2 weeks. So a lot of things going on. The NFL draft is next week. Luke will be doing split duty between the draft and when the Orioles get back next week, including joining me at Fadley's, where he will also get another Pac-Man scratch off for a second chance. And you spent a lot of time at the ballpark, my man. You know, we're, you know, a week every day. You've been down there for a week. They win a lot. They win in impressive fashion a lot. What they did Wednesday, you know, calling up a pitcher they didn't want to use. There wasn't one of their guys. We talked so much 2 weeks ago, all the way back in opening day, how they were going to utilize more than just what they had. And here you go. Every night there's a different star. Last week we're dealing Cedric Mullins for a relief pitcher from the Reds at the trading deadline. This week it's like, no. He's good. He's really good. And last week was Couser. This week it's Mullins. Here we go, dude. This is a really good baseball team.
It is, but we need to start with all due respect to Cedric Mullins, who we already talked about, the amazing play he made on Monday night, you know, play of the year candidate in mid-April. I mean, that's how impressive that play was in the first inning of Cole Irvin's start and what was an eventual win for the Orioles. Walk-off home run, we'll get to that. And again, we talked about this. Cedric Mullins, you know, I wasn't ready to trade him, but he wasn't healthy last year and he really struggled. But we've really seen over the last 2 weeks what kind of player he is. I've reminded what kind of player he is when he's healthy. But the story of the day Wednesday, it's Albert Suarez. I mean, this is a guy who is 34 years old, at this time last year was pitching in the KBO, had not made a major league appearance since 2017. In 2017, Gunnar Henderson was still in high school. Adley Rutschman was still in college. Cedric Mullins had not yet made his major league debut. And Jackson Holliday was 13 years old. So it speaks to how long it's been since Albert Suarez was in the major leagues, and to see him come up with a need because of Tyler Wells going on the IL. We had talked in a previous segment and I said, hey, it's just a guess. I don't know if it's going to be Bruce Zimmerman. The Orioles decided not, because Minnesota being a mostly right-handed lineup, save for a couple guys, I think they preferred a right-handed option. And you probably have forgotten, Nestor, and if you haven't, credit to you, because it was a pretty forgettable game. Albert Suarez started that game in Fort Myers, in which you and I attended down at Fenway South. He started for the Orioles in that game, and you know the results were not anything that wowed you, but 4 1/3 innings, one earned run, you know, a few strikeouts, four hits, and he had a spring training that put him on the map in the sense of. Not that he was going to be in the opening day rotation, of course, because he wasn't. But Mike Elias spoke at the end of spring training. And I even when I transcribed his long interview session with the media, where 50% of the dialogue was about Jackson Holliday being sent down, I actually highlighted he was asked about the rotation. And yeah, he mentioned Cade Povich. He mentioned McDermott. He mentioned Seth Johnson, who they got in the Trey Mancini trade a couple years ago. But he mentioned Albert Suarez. And the quote was, he's looking like a hell of a signing out of the KBO. And they signed him last September. They worked with him a little bit in terms of making some mechanical adjustments. His fastball has ticked up. We saw it on Wednesday, 95 to 97. He got quite a bit of swing and miss. And I get it. The Twins are awful offensively, and I'm just not sure if they're very good anyway. But they're still a major league team, and you're talking about someone who hadn't pitched in 7 years in the major leagues. For him to go out at a time where the Orioles had a need, at a time where the Orioles were not doing very much offensively over the course of the day against Pablo Lopez on the other side, for him to toss 5 2/3 scoreless innings, I have no idea if Albert Suarez will do anything else of consequence for the Orioles the rest of the year. But he was pivotal. He was critical in them winning a baseball game on Wednesday. And you said it, over the course of 162, and we saw this play out a number of times last year, you're going to have to get some contributions from some unexpected contributors, because things happen. Guys get hurt. Guys get kicked out of games. Guys, you lose players in lengthy rain delays, you know, paternity list, all kinds of different things that happen. You need some guys that come out of nowhere to help you out, even if it's just for a game or two along the way. And he certainly helped them on Wednesday. And
he looked like a big league pitcher, dude. And like, in a way that, like, I'm not saying he's going to be a guy or a dude or whatever, but it looked like he'd been there before. It didn't. I mean, even from the first pitch of the game, he looked like a guy. And they're talking about the history and the KBO, you know, all of that stuff and where he had been and his journey. And he's in mid-30s. He's almost your age.
Yeah.
But I would say for him from the beginning, he had some strange sense of belonging in a weird way. And look, man, these stories get written in a lot of different ways. And I keep saying Elias is a genius. And we're talking about Korea. I mean, you can Google Korea and Orioles and put a picture up of they weren't allowed in Korea, you know, this time 10 years ago. But this is a guy Sunday night, Monday night, was thinking about his next Triple-A start and probably happy to be pitching in Triple-A, right? Probably happy to be back and just, hey, the weather's cold, it's bad, but I'm back in America. I'm a heartbeat away. I'm a chance away. Maybe. What? I'm going where? I'll go do that. And it didn't look big for him in the way that it looked big for Jackson Holliday a little bit over the weekend. That's the difference between 20 and 34, too.
Yeah, sure. And look, that's a lesson right there of just dealing with failure. I mean, this is a guy who pitched for the Giants back in 16 and 17. He was in Arizona's system in 18, I think it was. And then he was very shortly after that, he was off to Japan. And he pitched in Japan multiple years. And of course, we're talking about the pandemic era and how challenging that's going to be for anyone that's, you know, pitching outside of their own country. And you know, he had to have thought, you know, you get, you know, we see examples of guys that go a few years in between major league appearances. You know, that's not that unheard of, but 7 years, I mean, that's a really long time. So for him to do what he did for the Orioles pro scouting to identify him over in the KBO, which, you know, most people will tell you KBO's double A in terms of talent level. I mean, we've seen plenty of KBO guys, you know, I mean, Hyunsoo Kim, example, who was a decent player for the Orioles for a minute or two. We've seen pitchers go over there and then come back and have some success at the major league level. But for him to do what he did and to persevere all that time and to come back and have this story, it's really fun. And to your point, it didn't look completely, you know, this wasn't like some junk ball guy that's just throwing slop up there and all that. And that, look, as I said, he could get shelled his next three outings and be DFA'd, but he was that was a very reputable, very legitimate performance on Wednesday afternoon. And the thing that really stood out about him over the spring, and that's why he kind of got on the radar in terms of being a what-if guy for them, you look at his spring stats, I think, you know, looking at it, 15 2/3 innings, he had 19 strikeouts and 2 walks over 15 2/3 innings. They like his fastball, and they like the fact that he throws strikes. So that's what we saw against the Twins on Wednesday. So it's great to see. And
he's Venezuelan too. I like that even more.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
You knew I would. You know,
you being a baseball guy like, you being a baseball guy like me, over the course of your lifetime, watching baseball on a nightly basis, putting aside the Orioles over the last 30 years and the lack of success, playoffs, all that kind of stuff, but just being a baseball fan, watching it on a nightly basis, you know how random it can be. You also know how the monotony of it, right? You watch a game and More often than not, you watch that game and you completely forget about it a couple of days later. This is one of those instances that, you know, you'll remember for a while. I mean, this guy that you might forget his name, but someone will bring it up and you'll say, oh, that's the guy. He didn't pitch
the Orioles
for
brought
7 years
up
in the majors.
In like 95 or 94, 95 from Bowie, when that was very uncommon. And he made an afternoon start and he held his own. I can't remember his name. I will Google it. I will find it. I'll drop it like a shell on you next Friday at Fadley's. Because it was a very forgettable name, but it had a lot of syllables in it, as I remember it. It had three, four, five syllables. It was a long name. And he came up, and I was there that day. And it was just this kid. He wasn't a big guy either. He was a shortish 5'10 guy, pitcher. And I don't think he ever pitched in the big leagues again. I mean, I have to look it up, and maybe I got it wrong by maybe he made eight more starts with the Tigers 2 years later or something like that. But he was a younger guy, but it was a very unlikely story. And 30 years later, I still can sort of, you know, if I finger rolled through some pictures of that year, I'd find his stat somewhere in there. One game started and be like, oh yeah, that guy. This is a different story because I think they'll be inclined. Like I said to my wife, when I was over, said they could use this guy in a bullpen or something, right? Like, I mean, like he looked like he at least wanted to be there and looked like Johnny Bravo. He fit the part. He fit the suit, as I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, he showed and looked like he knew what he was doing out there. And again, part of this might just be that the Twins look really lousy right now. And they've been terrible offensively, you know, especially without Correa in the lineup and whatnot. But it was very legitimate. The effort was legitimate. And, you know, they're, like I said, 95 to 97, got a lot of swing and miss, you know, through strikes. And, you know, I mean, the fact there were no designs that he was going to go out there and throw 100 pitches for them. So, you know, for him to get into the sixth inning and to do what he did, I mean, it was really impressive. I'll give you a couple examples.
I got it for you. I got the name, and he did pitch a little bit more, and he did pitch for another team, and he did make 39 starts in the big leagues. Are you ready? Scott Klingenbeck.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Absolutely.
Scott Klingenbeck came up in 1994. He made one start in 94. He had a 3.86 ERA. Went seven innings, six hits, four runs, three earned, gave up a home run, walked four, struck out five, and they sent him back.
Yeah.
That's who it is.
Yeah.
I said, dude, I'm a baseball guy. David Rubenstein, I'm a baseball guy. I want you to know that. But I came up with that. So there, have at it.
I'll give you a couple that came to mind. One a pitcher and the other not a pitcher.
I got another pitcher for you, too. Go ahead.
I thought of Chris Waters, who, if you recall, now this was in the midst of the Orioles, you know, 14 straight losing seasons, but he had a really impressive, I think it was 2008, I want to say it was against the Angels, maybe? He had a really impressive debut, and then I don't know if he threw a complete game shutout, but he had another amazing performance, like two or three starts after that. Didn't do much else other than that, but that came to mind for me as far as like a pitcher coming out of nowhere to pitch really well. And I'll give you the one, and this is one that's really stuck with me. It was 9 years ago. Henry Urrutia, who Dan Duquette signed, was a Cuban ball player who defected. You know, he ended up not being what this was another one of the rare international signings that the Orioles would make in that era. And, you know, he ended up not amounting to much. He did get to the majors, though. And in 2015, he hit a walk-off home run against the Mets, opposite field. I mean, I can remember it like it was yesterday. And, you know, he stuck around in the big leagues for a little while. But I just remember it because he had been through so much and obviously had defected. I mean, any player who defects from Cuba has a story, right? You know, whether they end up being a great player or not. And I just remember he did the post-game interview, and I had known that he spoke English. His English in just a matter of a couple years from coming to Cuba and making it to the States and being in the minors and working his way up to the major leagues, he spoke better English than any of the reporters in the post game scrum in the clubhouse. And he was so reflective for someone of his age. And he was probably 26 at that point. He wasn't that young as rookies go. And I remember he got the ball back from the fan who caught the home run, and he was just so emotional in how he talked about he was going to give that to his son. His son, I remember seeing him in the hallway down underneath in the bowels of the ballpark. His son was like 1 year, one, you know, one and a half, something like that. You know, no, he'd have no recollection of it. But Henry got choked up talking about giving that ball to his son. And I kid you not, there wasn't a reporter in that scrum who didn't get misty-eyed because it was just something that it just stuck with you. And look, will Albert Suarez do anything else?
This will be in your book of memoirs when I'm long gone.
Right.
You're going to have
just,
some of these
it's
stories.
It's fun. And again, this goes back to what I was saying and you appreciating this as a baseball nut like I am. You watch so much baseball over the course of your life. And I'm not even talking as a reporter. I'm just talking as a baseball fan, someone who's loved baseball from the time I was 2 years old, you know, as long before I can remember, I love baseball. You watch so many games and so many of them feel exactly the same, a win or a loss. You know, something might happen that's kind of sort of neat, or it might be completely nondescript. You forget so many of the games, right? They just become numbers that you look up. You used to say on the back of a baseball card, now it's Baseball Reference. This is one of those really good stories. And again, who the heck knows if he's going to do anything else of consequence? He's going to get a couple more opportunities at least. I think that much is clear after doing what he did. But it's just such a neat story, and it was neat to see him talk about it to us reporters in the clubhouse, and just about every reporter after his interview was over, you know, as they walked by, said congratulations, and you could just tell. As we were leaving the clubhouse, Ryan Mountcastle went up to him and gave him a big handshake and a bro hug, and you could tell that. Players in that clubhouse, even though they weren't expecting him to be there Wednesday or, you know, even Tuesday night, if they knew he was going to start Wednesday, you could tell that he made enough of an impression in spring training to thought, hey, you know, this guy's got a good arm, you know, for a 34 year old guy that was pitching in Korea and Japan over the last 4, 5, 6 years and completely off the major league radar. I mean,
yeah, the
just
broadcasters
and again,
talked about him being well liked by the veteran teammates and Ryan O'Hearn.
Yeah.
He had a relationship and they, you know, spring training's like that. You golf together, fish together, hang together. There's time to, hey, what do you do? Did you play with that guy? I played with that guy. Did you hit off that guy? Yeah. I mean, I remember those conversations well. And that's the brotherhood of baseball, but in a big way, different than the brotherhood of football. And you've covered a lot of football too.
Well, you know this with baseball. I mean, whether you're talking about, spring training is, you know, training camp gives you that kind of setting to a degree. But spring training, you have all those bus rides, right? And some of those are long bus rides. But over the course of a 162 game season, I mean, these guys spend more time with their teammates and with their coaches than they do their wives and their families.
Oh, it's 100 nights in a hotel. Like, start with that, a year.
So there's just a brotherhood with that. And anyone, you know, Ryan O'Hearn's a great example. I mean, a guy that, you know, wasn't making it with the Royals. I mean, go look at what his numbers were before the Orioles got him last offseason. But I think when you're talking about spring training, that setting where you're doing playing some in-school games, live BP, all that, major leaguers know when someone has something. And again, I don't want to make too much of this. Albert Suarez might get lit up over the next couple times he's out there, and he might be out of the organization come early June. But you could tell, and even from hearing Brandon Hyde talk after that last start in Fort Myers, hearing some of the guys talk about it after Wednesday's game, you can tell that he turned some heads in the spring. And as I mentioned, that Mike Elias quote I just gave you, that was from March 21st. You could tell that they thought, you know, this guy might have a chance to help us at some point. And again, might be one spot start. It might be three starts. To your point, he might settle into the bullpen. Who knows? I mean, especially a mid-90s fastball, you know, that's still, it's not 100. I get that. We talk so much about velo
in
this day and age.
But I saw some rise and shine on 97 that said to me, that's when I said to Jen, that guy could at least fit in their bullpen. He looks better than the Brian Bakers and the, you know, some of the guys that they brought out. He looks like he could be good. He can be a guy, an arm that we've talked about.
Yeah.
One of those guys in another organization that we said, Elias will pull a rabbit out. Yeah, it was the KBO and a Venezuelan guy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to put him in the Batista category because Batista throws 102 when he's healthy, but your point's well taken. And again, he made an impression. The fact that he would think about this, I was talking about Bruce Zimmerman. Why? Because he's been around and he was already on the 40-man roster. For this guy to be the first guy up, understanding John Means making at least one more start in Norfolk. Bradish just starting the rehab assignment, but for him to be the next man, the proverbial next man up, it shows you they thought something of him. So we'll see how it works out. And again, if nothing else, he helped them win a baseball game on April 17th. And that might not seem that consequential now, but if it's the difference between winning the division or getting the number one seed or the number two seed, and it's by one game, you'll look back on this and say, hey, that was one of those days where a completely unknown guy to the typical fan and even, you know, typical media who weren't at, down at spring training for 6 weeks every day, he helped them win. And it was fun. And he pitched well. And like I said, on a day where Pablo Lopez, after the Gunnar Henderson home run, I mean, he completely shut the Orioles down. I think maybe the other MVP besides Suarez and Cedric Mullins, it might have been Rocco Baldelli for taking out Pablo Lopez when I think he still had another inning left in him. So, you know, and Santander hit the home run to tie the game then. But, you know, on a day where, you know, the pitching really shined for both sides, you know, starting pitching specifically, you know, Suarez gave the Orioles everything they could have possibly dreamt of expecting out of him. So good to see. And again, a good way to cap what was a nice, strong finish to the homestand after, as we recapped a few days ago, you know, a tough series against Milwaukee. The Orioles took it out on the Twins big time. That much is clear.
I did a segment with Seth Elkin from the Maryland Lottery. We talked about he's a Pirates fan, so he got a hold of me. And with all this prosperity, it feels like Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, you know, couple series loss, like all of that. It feels like, all right, Kansas City, go back out on the road. You're going to have to play the Angels. It certainly didn't look very good at the beginning of the season. They'll look good in the middle of the season and won't look good at the end of the season. Got the A's coming in. I mean, this is a period for them where bats are coming to life. Weather's getting better, although it's supposed to be a little yucky in Kansas City this weekend. You've now been through two homestands. I've been to one game. I went opening day. My press credential is under review. I don't know what that means, but that's what they've told me. So people have been asking me, are they letting you back? I'm seeing Rubenstein. I'm seeing Cal Ripken and more Cal Ripken. And it's clear that Peter's dead. John's gone. There's a new sheriff in town. I keep saying, well, Greg Bader's there and TJ Brightman's there. And I don't know who's running Masson. I don't know. It feels like Ben McDonald and Kevin Brown, if somebody has sat down with them and say, do your thing. Peter's dead. He's gone. Nobody, John's not listening. Go do your broadcast. I mean, the broadcasts are phenomenal. Like, I don't want to say that from a home team sports perspective where there were angles. And I just mean, like, to sit as an interested observer watching the games. You're there. You're tweeting. I'm here. I'm watching. I have enjoyed the broadcast, the information. I love Ben. I've always loved Ben, but I love Ben. And then there's Cal. And I'm looking on the broadcast to see what's different. Well, I'll tell you one thing that's different. Kevin Brown doesn't think he's getting fired or benched and doesn't have a maniac who owns the team. Might be a different maniac. I don't know. It's David Rubenstein. I don't know anything about him. But that crazy family's gone. And the first thing I notice is Ben can joke about his love life and his wife, and Brett Hollander's telling me his dog has a media pass. Literally, Brett Hollander said his dog has a press pass. So I don't know what to make of it because I haven't run around, but everybody I know, Bill Cole and I did almost an hour on this earlier. You can go listen to that at Baltimore Positive too. You'll hear it on the radio. Just about how my timeline, people I know, the people who have always gone, you, Ed Lauer, the people that always go are going. But other people are going, and they're going in a different way. Bill Cole's got a 21-year-old son who doesn't really like baseball, who was down there last Friday and now wants to go again because he went to Pickles and there were girls. So there's just a lot of entry points. I saw 50% off tickets after the walk-off on my time. I don't know what it meant. I don't know if it's fishing. You know, I think at the end of it, TJ Brightman's running the place. I don't know what's, but if you click on it and you wanted 50% off tickets, I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt because Peter's gone, that it actually wasn't a scam and that you might be able to buy some $8 tickets on a certain night and load up on a couple of tickets the way the 420 people be loading up on Curio this weekend for the year. But I'm looking, I'm reading all their emails. I'm seeing what they're doing. I'm wondering when they're going to name like a team president and they're going to come in with whatever they come in with. Man, they got a good team. I keep saying this, like, Like Cal being out in front of this, even when the place is sort of empty, you know, sometimes, and it's not the upper deck. We'd like to sell a lot more tickets. So would everybody in baseball. But Cal being out in front of it this much in a way where he doesn't look any different. He doesn't look like he's got a king crown on or that he's running things, or they made the joke about the desk out at shortstop, which I thought it was a little sophomoric, but okay. I mean, you're doing John and Peter aren't here. The louder you can yell about that and the more you can do for that, the more a lot of people are going to want to come back and think about coming back. But Cal being out in front of it, I'll be interested to talk to Cal whenever I talk to Cal, whether I get my press pass back or not. I run into Cal places just to vibe him because I've known Cal over 30 years now, going on 35 years. And I don't know what his expectation – I don't know. I mean, I see his son running around doing – a lot. His son's got a press credentials, been in the media 6 months. And he's getting all these one-on-ones. It's family. It's what you like on hot dogs. I like Ryan Ripken a lot. I like Cal Ripken a lot. I like Kelly. I'm sure I'd like the daughter if I knew. I've always liked the Ripkins. I love Bill. Found a fun picture of him. It's going to be in my documentary. You know, it's day three, by the way. When the three-day countdown, I got a Bill and I picture I've never shared before. I love the Ripkins. I love Mom. You know, everybody loves Cal, and now that Cal's back in this, it does feel pinch me because he's not going away. He's here forever, like literally. I mean, like, and they can't yell about that enough, especially while Gunnar Henderson's hitting home runs and Cedric Mullins is hitting walk-offs and some guy named Albert Suarez, who didn't bite anybody's ear. That's a soccer reference. So you won't get that, Luke, but this has been an exciting 3 weeks in a whirlwind Willy Wonka kind of way. I feel like we're all kind of going through this and saying it's the best team ever. I've said that to my wife. I'm like, no, I've seen a lot of stuff. This is the best group of young players they've ever, ever, ever had. And they're building from nothing. And I see Cal Ripken every night. And it's like one of Cal's people, I've been going back and forth in Cal's orbit of people said, it's 23 years later than it should have been, but here he is. And we're all alive. A lot of us are alive. And I'm excited by it. I really am. And I'm looking forward to the next game. I look forward to the game starting. I look forward to talking to you. You and I are talking more. I'm working you to death. But it's fun. This is beautiful. I've waited a long, long time for this, man.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this started last year on the field, right? I mean, they won 101 games. I mean, they, you know, first 100-win season for the Orioles since 1980. I mean, that preceded Cal Ripken, right? So, but now when you have new ownership, had we seen Cal more the last couple of years as they were getting better? Yeah, sure. I mean, Cal, he's local. He loves baseball. But, I even said this to a few other reporters just to make sure I wasn't crazy. I mean, these first couple homestands, I feel like he was at every game other than two or three. So even if it's not David Rubenstein there every night, and look, I don't need ownership to be there every night. These guys have lives, and it's an 81 home schedule, right? 81
I think they should schedule. Give Jeppy a piece and just say he's the owner every night because he enjoys it more than anybody I know. I love Steve. You know,
well,
he's
Steve
there
Jeppy's
night.
There all. Yeah, I mean, he's behind the first base dugout. I mean, I see him there all the time. But I think it does mean something when people tune in to watch the game on a nightly basis. The team is really good, right? I mean, I don't know if they're going to win 100 more than 101 games, you know, because we know how baseball works, but they're really good. And I think their upside and the potential and the growth for this team is higher than it was last year. You know, the potential is greater than it was last year. And that's saying something. Even if it's just because they're a year experience and these guys now have playoff experience, albeit wasn't pleasant experience, but it was experience nonetheless. But to tune in and to see a legend, a Hall of Famer, you know, I know you'll say Jim Palmer, and I don't want to disrespect and choose one or the other, but one of the two greatest living Orioles sitting behind home plate on an almost nightly basis, there's value to that. I don't know how you quantify that exactly. I don't know how hands-on Cal's going to be, but that's a perfect example of why David Rubenstein or whoever was going to buy the club wanted to have Cal Ripken involved, because he's going to be present. right? And that commercial, to your point, I had to laugh because I saw a lot of fans thinking it was some cryptic message that they were extending Gunnar Henderson, and I thought that was a little crazy. That was a major leap. But that said, how is it not a bad idea to have those two guys, you know, to have Gunnar Henderson, the future, the guy who looks like he has a chance to be the best player in baseball. I mean, he's on fire. Go look at the numbers are one thing. Go look at the exit velo and all the peripherals. I mean, this kid's crushing the baseball. It looks like one of the absolute best players in the game at this point.
It's like Barry Bonds-y a little bit weird, right? Like the way he hits the ball.
I mean, the guy, one of his, you know, the guy that he really looked up to and they faced off in the playoffs last year. I mean, it's like Corey Seager. I mean, that's what, you know, this big left-handed swinging shortstop who right away you look at him and say, well, he's not going to stick at shortstop, and he makes big time plays. Now, you know,
yeah, there's a guy out there with the desk who was too big to stick at shortstop too.
Well, but that's my whole point from a marketing standpoint. Even if it's just like to your point, it was campy, you know, it was cheesy, but it was good cheesy, you know, the fact that you have Gunnar Henderson interacting with Cal Ripken. I mean, why would you not want to do something like that? Whether it means, you know, whether they're going to extend them or not, you know, putting aside the fans jumping to conclusions based on just what was a silly commercial. But
he is here for the next 5 years.
At the very least, right? Yeah, and you hope longer than that because, again, this kid's he's incredible. I mean, it's why starting last year I said to you, nothing against Adley Rutschman, but if you're asking me Gunnar Henderson or Adley Rutschman, I'm taking Gunnar. I just am. You know, that position ages better than catcher. But that aside, just doing those types of things and having Cal Ripken involved and present, and even if it's just sitting behind home plate. I mean, we didn't talk about it, but how about Masson getting him on the phone when they were in Boston talking about the fact that Jackson Holliday took his number? Or took Cal Senior's number, and there had been some dialogue, and Jackson Holliday actually got Cal's number and reached out and called him and wanted to talk to him a little bit just to say thank you. I really appreciate this. I want to do the number proud. I want to represent the memory of your father in a respectable way. And I mean, that's good for a team that at times ran from its history, you know, in these weird ways,
or fought
even though
with
that's
its
all
history.
They really had to sell. Even though it's all they had to sell for the longest time, but it was just that weird contrast, that weird clash for that to feel like that's gone away. And now, again, you have Cal there every night. Jim Palmer still part of the broadcast team. Eddie was there. You know, Eddie Murray was there the day that Rubenstein had the press conference. I mean, they had their three living Hall of Fame Orioles present. I mean, that's what else? That's what Orioles fans have wanted for all these years. I mean, we can remember when Brooks left the broadcast booth and wasn't really involved other than he was still local. Like he was still around in the community, but he wasn't involved with the Orioles anymore.
And Brooks was offended.
It was just something that was senseless. And I'm,
you know,
right. And look, we don't need to dwell on that, but now to see what this is and the potential that it has. And even though there's still lots of issues to hash out, the winning at this clip deodorizes anything else that's a question or anything else that's a potential, you know, I don't want to say pitfall, but anything that still has to be worked out. We've talked about it. Masson still needs, you know, what's the long-term viability of Masson? How's that going to look? How's it going to look on the business side? Who are they going to hire? You mentioned whether it's a team president or a CEO at some point, you know, who within the organization is going to stay, who's going to go, because we know changes are inevitable whenever you change ownership. I mean, in any business, that's always going to happen. So there are questions and even things that could be potential concerns. But in the meantime, you've got this ball club that is off to a great start on the heels of a great 2023 season. And now that you at least have new ownership in place. And as we said, the day that news broke, the daring to dream of being able to raise that bar, wherever, however high it can go, it's there now when it wasn't there. And oh, yeah, Mike Elias is still running the show, and you still have all these great young players, and you have more on the way. I've said it, and it sounds so cliched, but, boy, it's a heck of a time to be an Orioles fan right now. I mean, it's just – it really
And there's
is.
Room on that bandwagon.
Absolutely. And those who've stuck – whether we're talking about those who've stuck through it and continue to go out there when there were 8,000 people in the ballpark, or those who were offended and walked away because of not liking ownership or not liking – Davey Johnson being fired or John Miller going off to San Francisco.
Or the fact that Cal and Brooks weren't
all
there.
All of that.
Yeah.
So anyone who's come back or anyone who's stuck with it, I mean, this fan base deserves it. And again, speaking as someone who's 40 years old and did not get to live the glory days, I want those glory days to return as much as they can anyway. We know it, you know, things aren't the same. It's 2024. It's not 1966 or 1983 anymore.
Well, I keep keeping my eye on the big prize for me, which is when that glory day comes and the team gets better. And what does that mean for the city? I guess it meant on Sunday the 35,000 real people came downtown. I don't know what that meant for Amici's. I don't know what that meant for South Baltimore. I don't know what that meant for hotels and this and that and foot traffic and the tax base. But there is something about people that beget other people and opportunities, all of that, jobs, living, what it means for the city that the baseball team can be the kind of team that can attract 2.5-3 million people downtown every year for the next 10 years, because it's the exact opposite of what it's been the last three decades, which is really well run for what it is in a smaller market with all of these assets and all of the problems, including the city and crime and like all the reasons people wouldn't want to come. But 35,000 people did come on Sunday in April, and the weather was nice and people came out and they weren't giving away five bobbleheads. They actually came for the game. Maybe to run the bases, but it's always been such a beautiful asset and such a beautiful thing for the community. And that's why I did Free the Birds. I'm relearning my own ideologies as I put this 25th anniversary documentary together, and why I did what I did and the reasoning behind it. And it really was to get to this point that if Peter would have died in 2009 and there was new owners in 2010 and it was Rubenstein or some guy like that with Cal, how different the last 15 years would have been. You know, you just like how different this can be in the first, 18 days since opening day. I said 50. I was going to say 15 days. It's been less than 3 weeks since opening day. And we've already got Cal, Gunner, first place, Yankees here, pitching, Corbin Burns, extend this guy, extend that guy, Holiday's up. Like, we're there. And oh, they're going to pick football players next week too. Everybody's bored by that. Anything you want to say to Rapp or Kansas City? I mean, we'll be back at it again. That's the beauty of this baseball thing. It's sort of for you and me now that the team's good. It's a never-ending conversation. And the people that are coming and watching us and listening to us and interacting with us and clicking on our stuff at Baltimore Positive or watching my documentary next weekend or following your draft or on the tech service, the baseball heartbeat is what founded this company. It's what founded my career. It's the only thing I had in 1992 and 3 and 4 and 5 in the beginning, including the strike years. So the fact that this heartbeat is back, I recognize it for what it is, and scheduling my days around the games. And it's been a while, but I lived most of my life that way. It's just been the last really 10 years where it felt like it was Cuba and it was never going to get fixed. I'm heartened. I hope to sit next to you in the press box and have a hot dog one day, or even better, sit there when you're not there because you're out covering the draft, like maybe next weekend or something like that, you know?
A couple things. One, the Ravens had, and I don't want to get into too much of that, but I'm just making an observation here. The Ravens had an availability on Wednesday for the start of the offseason program, and they made Derrick Henry available, Roquan Smith available, Tyler Linderbaum, you know, good players, star players. There were and not everyone in the media covers all the teams, right? You know, not everyone covers the Ravens and the Orioles.
So it's an interesting exclusive group. I want to point that out as the owner of the company.
But there were a few, you know, there were a few other reporters besides just me who were at the ballpark. And that's, the Ravens had a good availability. Again, I'm not, but think about in years past, if the Orioles were 7-14, you know, if their record was flipped and they were 6-12 rather than 12-6, you know, I would have been at in Owings Mills, and others would have been, and that would have been probably the headline of the day. Whereas it didn't really feel that way. Other thing, and this is more on the, just the, on the field, you made mention of the Kansas City Royals this weekend. Don't sleep on the Royals. I don't know if you've paid attention to what they've done since leaving Baltimore after a series where the Orioles, they gave the Orioles everything they could handle to win two out of three. Remember, two walk-offs in that series that the Orioles needed. The Royals are 12-7. They have pitched extremely well. They have hit the baseball. They have a star in Bobby Witt. They still have some other, you know, Salvador Perez and some other guys that have been around for them. And this is going to be a, this could be a as intriguing as it can be in mid to late April in terms of one team that's clearly established as a contender because the Orioles did that last year. But I'm telling you, the Royals, and we kind of talked about this in passing a little bit before that series, and we talked about it a little bit when it concluded, but they're playing really good baseball right now. The run differential is excellent. They're scoring runs. They're pitching. We already saw Cole Reagans once. Orioles, you know, we're going to see Burns and Reagans on Saturday of that series. So as much as the Orioles are off to a good start and they're going on the road again, and yeah, you know, they played some teams like the Twins, for example, who are not playing good baseball right now, but this is, they better be ready because the Royals are playing some really good baseball. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to see a rematch of 2014 at some point in October. I'm not ready to say that, but this is a way better Royals team than they've been for several years now. So looking forward to that, and certainly we'll recap it, but good way to finish this homestand. Again, Albert Suarez and Cedric Mullins, the stars on Wednesday, but Orioles, five straight games with three or more home runs. First time they've done that since 1996, that record-breaking home run club that, you know, slugged their way, even though they didn't have much pitching to talk about other than Mike Messina. They slugged their way to the postseason that year. First time they homered three times in five straight games, going back to 1996. So, and you said it on opening day, they're going to hit the baseball, and boy, they are really hitting the baseball. And that's without Jackson Holliday or Austin Hayes or a couple other guys that are still waiting to get going.
Well, I mentioned Seth Elkin from the Maryland Lottery doing the show this week. He's a baseball nerd, and he was on Baseball Reference because they have the home run riches. And every time the bases are loaded, they have a chance to give $5,000 away, right, for every home run instead of $500. So they've had more bases loaded situations this year than any other team. And it's like, how many grand slams are they going to hit? We're going to find out. How many home runs are they going to hit? John Martin was unavailable this week to do the show. He was so busy giving money away. I mean, that's really what the story was this week. So I will not be too busy to give money away. We'll be at Green Mount Bowl on Wednesday. Yes, next to Green Mount Station, eating the Green Mount Station crab cake. But I'll be talking bowling, and I'll be talking horse racing. I'll be giving the Pac-Man scratch-offs away with the top prize, $10,000. We've had a lot of fun giving these away. We'll be at Fadley's on Friday giving these away as well. I hope everybody has a great weekend. Enjoys the baseball of live via satellite from Kansas City. Man, you get me hungry, you start talking about going back to Kansas City. I mean, I'm ready for barbecue. So, you know, get me there this weekend. I'm ready for all that. He is Luke Jones. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet is served. You can follow both of us at Baltimore Positive anywhere the internet is served as well. We have the 25th anniversary documentary coming out next week. No one listens, everyone hears. I'm the star, but Luke Jones makes some cameos. It is a retrospective piece on how this got here and how we did 25 years of all this, and how we're hoping to be here for 25 more covering the Orioles and the Ravens and doing the good work that we do. Political season. If you heard Sheila Dixon this week, if you heard Shannon Sneed, you'll be hearing lots of political candidates next couple weeks, because I like talking about making the city better. I think it's important. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.